Welcome to Finding Your Identity, the podcast about helping you find your identity. Hello, and welcome back. This is episode 2 of Finding Your Identity. And today, I want to focus on the topic I'm going to call taking opportunities. And I think it's important to try to recognize what kind of opportunities you might have when it comes to your work, or, you know, generally it could be applied in life. I think if you actually take a step back for a second and you consider everything you do as an opportunity to grow your knowledge and skill set, anything you do in your life, if you consider that as the basis of discovering opportunities, think that you might actually come across several opportunities in your life that may pass by because for whatever reason you just weren't paying close enough attention to them to recognize that they are opportunities. And what I really mean by this is when you're in this critical phase of growing knowledge and skills, I think it's important that you ask yourself, is what am I about to do worth my time as it applies to my long-term goals? And I think, you know, from a career perspective, this is a good angle to approach your career from, thinking, you know, what am I working on right now? Is this an opportunity to learn something that's going to actually help my career? Or, you know, even just learning a new skill is part of your personal growth. You may come across opportunities in life that you should be able to take advantage of those opportunities. So, you know, when I speak about this, it is leaning towards this idea of, you know, finding an opportunity when it applies to growing skills that'll be useful for helping you develop in a career path, or more importantly, helping you develop in a way where you can make money from what you've learned and the skills that you've built. And I have several times in my life, I've come across opportunities that I feel like I might have missed, or there's been certain instances where I've taken the opportunity to do something. But I think it starts first with just looking at it from a holistic perspective. You know, what are these opportunities? You know, what should I be on the lookout for? And it kind of starts with that mindset and thinking, what am I doing right now that's going to be helping me with this long-term goal? I'm about to sit down and binge watch an episode or 70 of some show on Netflix. And while that might be fun and it might be entertaining and a good way to pass time, you have to ask yourself, is there something else I could be doing right now to help me get towards this goal that I'd really like to achieve relatively soon in my life? You know, there's going to be plenty of time after I reach that goal, potentially, to sit down and binge watch 150,000 episodes of some show on Netflix. And, you know, if you kind of can teach yourself to step back and think, like, what is this doing for me? Is this beneficial for reaching that goal? That's kind of a start. And if you realize that, you know, the opportunity might be to do some research on whatever skills you're trying to build, and you know, take that time that you would have spent sitting there watching a show and kind of zoning out to some degree, and think, okay, am I actually missing an opportunity to sit down because I have this, you know, such and such amount of time to do something where I'm going to have uninterrupted silence or an uninterrupted slot of time, I could sit down and actually read a book or go online and maybe, you know, study up by taking classes or whatever it is. I mean, whatever it is, it could be, you know, that time should be spent where you go and visit people that are going to help you with networking to reach your goal or talking to other people that might help reach your goal. And, you know, if you aspire to make Netflix documentaries, then sit down and watch those Netflix documentaries in a zillion episodes. And, you know, you can count that as the opportunity to learn how those documentaries are being made and what's so big about them that makes them so popular. And you can use that as an excuse to binge watch. But if you really think about it and you recognize that it's probably not the best time to be watching that show, then plan it out what you think you're going to do to, you know, build out your knowledge base or your skill sets to go and reach that goal. And I do recognize that you do need downtime to relax and clear your head, but you could do that when you're dead. No, I'm just kidding. But there are times when you can actually be relaxing and, you know, harnessing some level of productivity to grow. You know, reading, it can be relaxing if you don't make it too stressful. You know, if you can have a quiet moment to sit down and read a book, that's always relaxing, you know, or make it enjoyable. So, you know, if it's talking to other people, that could be a positive way to spend your time and not have it feel like work. I mean, I think the important thing is that you need to enjoy it. You know, you can't actually do something that you hate well. It's important that you enjoy what you're aspiring towards. You know, the end goal needs to feel like it's going to be reaching a certain level of satisfaction when you get there. I think that's important. And I know it sounds a little crazy, and like maybe it's not fun because you're not going to be able to sit down and binge watch shows. But you got to remind yourself it's not forever. It's just until you complete that goal. If you happen to have many goals to work towards, then, you know, it may take a while. It may take a long time, and you may have to plan accordingly. If you look at it in workflow perspective, and something I'm familiar with this agile workflow perspective, there's a concept of, you know, working hard for this set period of time, and then actually having down time periods, like having a slowdown, having periods of time where you can actually work to improve your processes, or, you know, do things that might be extracurricular from the perspective of the work. So it's not that I'm saying you should go out and, you know, kill yourself and make yourself miserable. I think you just need to gain some kind of perspective about how you're working towards that goal. And, you know, I think that's what's important. The next step really is trying to identify what opportunities are and, you know, considering something that's going to help maybe progress your career. And this is where I can make a reference to what I personally found as an opportunity while I was working for that company that I spoke about in the first episode. The one where, you know, when things kind of went a little downhill and crazy, I actually recognized it as an opportunity. And the story goes like this. I essentially got hired into this company and didn't really have a lot of knowledge about what this company did. And I was brought in as this associate marketing manager. And I was working on a team of about 13 other people who are also working marketing. And my job was to create what they called solicitations, which for the web, which were really just these kind of these pages that were, I guess you could say, advertisements for our product in a way, which incidentally, not a lot of people ever really saw these pages because of the shadiness of the business. But the other aspect was we were, you know, did a lot of A/B testing and multivariate testing, and from a marketing perspective, that's very important to test things, to figure out what's working better than something else, and you can prove this with analytics data, especially on the web. It's easy when you can count views or clicks and you know, follow the path from beginning from the click to the view to signing up to getting onto a registration complete page and then actually getting to the final product and using it. And that's all important information that you kind of learn and can follow when you're doing, you know, A/B testing. And I had to create these solicitations that were, you know, really kind of simple, but pretty wordy. And that was like the challenge. And it wasn't a lot of fun, but it was a job. And a lot of it was just trying to come up with interesting ideas and as a way to try to do new tests. And what I was able to do, because I did have a passion for technology, I was able to position myself as this, you know, tech oriented marketer who wanted to try to leverage technology on the web to either do new types of functionality to gain clicks or web page views, or come up with interesting ways to track or, you know, to actually run a test. And so I was kind of put in charge of pitching tech ideas, essentially, and simple things like, a modal window, you know, what is that going to look like? You click a button and this window pops up over top of your page and has bells and whistles or whatever and says, you know, click this button now or, you know, give up your firstborn. But it was, you know, one of those opportunities that I was able to take on that as a responsibility to go out and actually do research. And I was getting paid and told, hey, you should go out and do as much research as possible and go find out about everything out there that could be useful to us, you know, to do new things. And so I was in charge of what they called new tech, quote unquote, which allowed me to essentially leverage my knowledge in a way that would allow me to grow my position and also grow out my skill set and my reputation for having an understanding of this new technology. And, you know, and an end result was that it was helping the company because we were growing subscriber rates and, you know, we had increased click-throughs and people were signing up for this service / product. And that was good. And so that worked out. The problem arose when people started asking questions about the business and started saying, well, you know, how are these people actually joining? Well, we knew that people were, you know, accidentally essentially clicking on their buttons and signing up for these services and not really realizing that they were signing up for something that was going to be billing them $12 a month for ever. And ever until they figured it out and they called in to cancel or attempted to cancel online. But either way, the users had to take some kind of step to stop the billing from happening because it wasn't something that was just going to stop. They had to recognize it. And the other part of the problem, which is what led to a United States Senate inquiry and class action lawsuits and being sued by the state of New York and following that several other states, was the fact that the credit card information that was being used to bill $12 a month, was being passed by another company that the user had just purchased a product on. So they were on a buy.com website and they were making a purchase, and then they finished the purchase and said, oh, hey, great, I'm going to get my new iPod or whatever being delivered. And they get on a page that says, hey, get 10 bucks, click here. And they click the button and they're signed up for a service. And then it's like, oh, well, you know, that $10 can't be used until the next time you go make a purchase on buy.com. But, you know, you get to enjoy some benefits and blah, 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 to the point where people just kind of tuned it out, just closed out the page and didn't really follow through and recognize that now they were signed up for a service, which they could have landed on that product and could have gotten some benefits out of that service, but just were unaware. And especially unaware that the credit card info that they had just used to purchase the buy.com product was actually now in the hands of another company that was now going to be billing them 12 bucks a month. And it was going to show up in the credit card statement. And there was a lot of people who just didn't check their credit card statements, and $12 was so insignificant. It never seemed like much. It would just get paid as a part of their bill. And this went on for 10 years. And people unassumingly like just continued to fall for this, you know, trap. And that's what the business was built on. And it really wasn't that clear to me until I had been there for about a year or so, that it was really kind of sketchy. You know, I think all of us who were working there kind of tried to convince ourselves that it was an acceptable practice, because our jobs as marketers was to try to tell people what they were getting themselves into. And I'm thinking that button, you know, says click here, but it also has a little disclaimer at the bottom that says, hey, be careful, if you click that button, you're going to be signed up for this service. But in my head, I'm thinking, well, I told you so. What's the problem? I told you were going to be billed. And users were taken advantage of. So needless to say, that led to a lot of problems. And a company that had been around for 10 years had, you know, millions in revenue, had, I think, somewhere around 500 employees possibly at the time. All of a sudden, things came to an immediate halt. And it was a very interesting experience for me, because, you know, a first job out of college, I didn't really know what to expect when the company started to do poorly. And, you know, you hear stories about people having to go through layoffs, but I just remember it started with us being told, hey, guess what? No one's leaving the building tonight until we go and change every single piece of marketing that we have out on the web, because it's now illegal to have it out there. And so we stayed till about 11 o'clock at night that night, and then had to come in super early the next morning and pull another day for about just as long to essentially fix all of those, you know, bad marketing campaigns and, you know, change to a method that was more in line with what would be considered okay. And that was the first step. And then the, you know, shortly after, as the weeks were kind of going, everybody was starting to recognize this is probably not going to be good. And there was some people who were I was close to talking to, who said, I hope your resume is ready, because something's coming soon. And sure enough, it was just a matter of probably from when that first, I guess, cease and desist type of letter came across the desk of somebody. It was about a month, I think, later that they did the first round of layoffs. And I remember clearly sitting in my cube, and I had actually got in a little bit late. And I remember I sat down and I got a message, instant message from my boss, who said, sit still, you know, don't do anything. They're letting people go. And they said, you just need to wait there until somebody comes and gets you. And so I just sat there for about 4 hours, like freaking out, just wondering what the heck was going to happen, because I never had been through it and nobody had really prepared me for this. And I could see people, because it was, you know, a cube farm, like cubicle farm type of office, I could see above the cubicles like people being walked away and then them not coming back. And slowly, as those 4 hours kind of went by, it was very clear that the whole environment was going to be completely different after that day. And I made it. And this had started in the morning, you know, so like I guess 8 o'clock, and wrapped up about 12 o'clock. So it was that, you know, that 4 hour period, it was just quiet and they were doing whatever they were doing. I didn't really know what was happening. I just know people were being escorted away from their cubes and they were supposed to bring all of their stuff with them. If they didn't, you know, want to leave anything, they had to take everything with them right then and there, but they weren't allowed to go back into their computers. They weren't allowed to take any paperwork that wasn't, you know, that their paperwork that was considered the company's property, just their personal belongings. And they were led away, brought to a conference room. I found this out later, offered some kind of severance package, and then walked out of the building and escorted out and never seen again, essentially. And so after the 4 hours had passed, I was sitting there and a manager had come by and said, okay, you know, everybody, we're going to be meeting in the conference room down the hall. And so what was left of my team, which had essentially been cut in half, we met, and it was just quiet and everybody was kind of, you know, freaking out internally and trying to remain calm. And my boss was essentially saying, okay, you know, they're done. And it was, I think it was a vice president who ended up popping in the room who said, you know, officially we're done. That's it. There's not going to be any more layoffs for the next, you know, 3 months. That was all that they had planned. And, you know, he was sorry and basically told everyone to gather their thoughts and they could take their stuff and go home for the rest of the day while they kind of digested what had just happened. And this was on a Friday. So it was kind of, you know, terrible timing, I think. But that Friday, so they're like, okay, come back Monday morning, you know, fresh start, and we'll have new marching orders. And so I left, you know, me and some of my coworkers, we were just thinking, like, let's go talk about this. So we went down the street to this bar that was open and just sat and talked and, you know, just tried to digest what was happening. And we were all kind of in shock. And I looked at that as the first very clear sign that I was not ready to go find a new job, because I had got pretty complacent in the current position. So immediately my first action was get my resume ready and, you know, start talking to people, start talking to the recruiter who actually I had worked with to get into that web loyalty position. And I took action. I said, this is an opportunity right now, a clear one for me to get in gear and start thinking, okay, what do I need to do to change the situation? Because that was some scary stuff. And I don't want to have to be on the other end of it being walked out. I want to get out of there before that happens. And I still didn't have enough of a resume built to do anything in professional development. And so I was looking for marketing jobs and stuff related to marketing. And I went back in on that Monday and we got new marching orders, and I recognized that they had made a seriously bad decision by laying off a ton of the developers who were working on things that nobody else really knew about, except I had been kind of talking with them because I wanted to understand it from the new tech pitching perspective. And so I recognized an opportunity. I said, hey, I know how to do a little bit of JavaScript development. And I stepped up and I said, I can do that. So let's get me working on something. And I took that opportunity. And when I stepped up, I was feeling confident that I told everybody that I didn't really know that much, but I knew enough and I could, you know, potentially lend a hand. And I didn't have a lot of pressure and I didn't really own the responsibility of actually having to develop stuff. It was more or less me trying to help out some of the other remaining developers that were there. And it was an opportunity for me to also grow and learn. And I definitely took it. And there was another guy who was actually a graphic designer who had used to be a developer who didn't really like developing and wanted to just do the graphic design. And so I tapped him to say, hey, listen, teach me, you know, the stuff that you don't like, because I like that stuff. So we kind of worked together. And again, another opportunity that I was able to leverage my lack of knowledge into a position to gain knowledge, and then found, you know, a mentor and got somebody to help guide me. And I learned quite a bit there, and I was able to learn enough where I felt comfortable putting it on my resume. And when another round of layoffs occurred and I was spared again for some reason, probably because I was, you know, the stupid lackey who was volunteering to do a bunch of more work than I was really getting paid for, I survived that round of layoffs. But I had gained enough knowledge that I actually was talking to new potential employers and actually had some really solid interviews. And I actually did find a company that was the next company that I ended up going to, and was able to get out of Dodge before the town of Dodge burned down, which, you know, interestingly happened about a month or so after I left. And that to me was a really good example in my life, and something I like to reference back to as taking advantage of that opportunity to build my skill set, to recognize that I needed to make a change before something terrible happened, and that I really didn't want to have to go through a round of layoffs. And it just seemed kind of terrifying, even though, I don't know, maybe it would have been great. Maybe the severance package was actually pretty decent. I had only been there for, I think it was about 2 years at this point. But, you know, I don't know. It's hard to tell, but I look back and think, I'm glad I did what I did. I'm glad I took the opportunity, because that just would have been sad. Wouldn't have been something I really would have treasured and wanted to go back and tell the story about how I was laid off. I think it's a more valuable lesson to go and tell you about the story of how I survived layoffs and then actually turned them into opportunities to get a new job and get out of there well before I was fired. I mean, laid off. And it's a good lesson. And I think it's important to reflect on it. And I think some of the takeaways would have been going into the job thinking this isn't forever, you know, thinking I should always be thinking of what's next, you know, from day one. I mean, some great advice I got from a mentor of mine, he said, you know, the best time to look for a new job is the day you start your new job. Because if you think about it, that's when you're going to have the most security in that job, is when they, you know, they first start you out and it's a new job. So it's a good time for you to start thinking, hey, okay, well, what's my next move? Because you never know. You never know what could happen. You could be in that 90-day grace period and they just say, hey, you know what? You're not what we expected, so see you later. And then you're out again in very precarious situation, trying to find a job, figure out how you're going to feed your family, and deal with all the chickens that you seem to have acquired at your house. So, you know, that's why when I got to the next place, when I started at Zach and Publications, and as soon as I got in there, I recognized this was not going to be forever. I, you know, talked up and down to them, of course, because that's what you got to tell the employer. Yeah, hey, yeah, this is definitely where I want to be, and I can't see in the next 5 years me being anywhere else. But in truth, unless, you know, things had turned out differently where I actually was able to become a professional developer there. But as soon as I started there, I recognized that their IT guy was a nutcase and that there was no way he was going to let anybody else play in his sandbox. So I recognized, well, I'm not going to be a developer here ever in a professional capacity. So I immediately started with the plan, you know, a couple months into that gig, and I recognized it as, this is just a short time gig, this is paying the bills, giving me experience, and hey, by the way, they haven't figured out how to fill in 9 months of the year for some reason of my workload. They've only given me something that's going to last 4 months of the year where I'm going to be really working. And then the rest of the year, I got to twiddle my thumbs. And I said, well, you know what? This is great. This is an opportunity for me to try to build skill sets that I don't have. And at first, I started off doing it from within the company, stuff that would actually help me with my job and help me grow and potentially try to figure out things that would benefit them. But that quickly devolved because, like I said, the IT guy was nutso and wouldn't let me play in a sandbox. And I constantly was fighting uphill. So I said, you know what, I'm just going to start doing freelance work, stuff that's not even related to my job. And I'm going to start working on that in my spare time. And if it overlaps in some capacity over my current daily job, then so what? Because, you know, what it really meant was they had, you know, they were a victim of poor planning, I think, because the main reason that I was hired was to handle a product that was essentially dying and nobody could see the writing on the wall. And they didn't have a backup plan after they hired me for what I could be doing in my spare time. So I wasn't going to sit there and stare at the wall for several hours during the day. I decided I'm going to be productive. I'm going to make something out of this sour lemonade. Is that a saying? Probably not. Make lemons out of lemonade? I made lemon meringue pie and I continued to do freelance work. And I, you know, ended up getting a lot of clients that were very interesting all around the world, Australia and Ukraine and London. And I built out my online freelance business. And I still work from people in India and Pakistan because I underbid them, even though they were already like super cheap. I just said, hey, I'll work for pennies on the dollar just because I want to get the experience. And it ended up working out because I ended up getting clients that they, you know, pay me nothing to start this project, but then hire me on afterwards at a decent hourly rate to continue doing work for them because they trusted me and they could speak English to me and I could speak English back and understand them. And what do you know? That's how relationships are built. And so I kind of followed that pattern and I actually was making decent money doing it and learning and filling time and not going insane. And it ended up working out. And so that was the second opportunity from a career perspective that I took advantage of because I was recognizing that if I didn't put in the work right now at that given time, that I was going to be stuck there until they literally had to fire me because it was going to look stupid to keep me not working and paying me. And the owner of the company was a nutcase and really selfish. And so, you know, I could see the writing on the wall that company wasn't going to be around for very long. Incidentally, it isn't around anymore. And it's unfortunate, but, you know, I even remember hearing somebody say that the guy only rolled out new products when he needed to buy something big, like a vacation house or a boat. So you operate in that kind of manner, you're destined for great things, I bet, right? Not really. Company's gone. And that was several companies ago for me, from my perspective. So I'm definitely happy that I made the move when I did. And I was able to actually get into a really good company. And that's when I went to the NSSF, which was a really great place to work. And it was my first real gig as a web developer, professionally known as a web developer. And it opened the door for a lot of opportunities. And I was very grateful for being hired there and, you know, met some really great people along the way. But more importantly, I was able to continue to build out my skill set. And, you know, that was one of the biggest things that I was really looking for because I wanted to continue to grow and continue to learn more about any kind of development. And I found myself at the NSF being able to actually spread out and learn a broad set of different skills within web development, which was really helpful, and that, you know, was building a great foundation for the future that I was looking to move into in terms of being a web developer. And that's a great example of following the opportunities and the paths that those opportunities were developing. And I think it's important to look for opportunities in life, especially when you're in a position where you are really trying to grow as an individual, as a person in your personal life, or if you're trying to grow in your professional life, or in any aspect, you know, in relationships with others, you can find opportunities. They're usually around the corner. You just need to be on the lookout for them. And I think a main takeaway from this episode is, you know, really just kind of putting priorities in place in your mind to think back and think about what you're trying to accomplish, and think, you know, am I doing something right now that's going to be beneficial because I really have this goal that I really want to achieve? And, you know, like I opened up with this podcast, I question sometimes what I'm doing and whether it's useful for me to do that right now, whether it's a good use of my time. So that's kind of what I was trying to get at in this podcast, and I hope that's the takeaway that people receive. And I'll leave that with you. I want to thank you again for listening to this episode, and hope you tune in to the next episode of Finding Your Identity.